Could AI help you do more of what you love? Workday is the next-gen ERP powered by AI that actually knows your business. We help you handle the have-to-dos so you can focus on the can't-wait-to-dos. It's a new Workday.
Hey everyone, welcome to another snack-sized edition of our show, How Success Happens. I'm Dan Bova, writer and editor at entrepreneur.com. So I wasn't exactly a theater kid growing up, but I was like theater kid adjacent. And I don't know, perhaps you caught my portrayal of Smedley T. Crumb in Sagamore Junior High School's production of How the Toys Save Christmas? Or maybe my turn as the voice of the plant in Little Shop of Horrors? Italian kid trying to sound like a member of the Four Tops. Sometimes you just have to be glad that every second of your childhood wasn't captured and uploaded to social media. Phew! Anyway, I grew out of my theater kidness, but this week's guest didn't, and man, has it worked out for him and for us, the theatergoers. Brian Anthony Moreland is a two-time Tony Award-nominated lead producer on Broadway. In a minute, I'll have him explain what a lead producer does. So he's produced, among many other things, Othello, starring Denzel Washington and Jake Gyllenhaal. And I spoke to him now as he's readying a new show, Joe Turner's Come and Gone, which stars Taraji P. Henson and Cedric the Entertainer, and is directed by Debbie Allen. It begins performances on March 30th, and it's officially going to open on April 25th. I shall be there. So Brian and I had a great conversation, despite the fact that he's a Yankees fan. And we talked about the amazing dramas that he's put on stage and the not-so-fun dramas he's had to deal with behind the scenes, which really any producer is going to need to deal with, which brings me to my first question. Perhaps you have the same question. Brian, what does a producer actually do?
You know, I get this question all the time. I think there's a couple of ways to explain it. But on the Broadway side, we have basically three types of producers. We have executive producers, which are employed by lead producers. And we have co-producers, who are people that assist in our fundraising process. And then we have lead producers. I'm a lead producer. Lead producers are the person that goes and has that very wonderful conversation with the theater owner. They secure the theater. They sign their name to the SEC. They are financially responsible for the show. They handle the day-to-day marketing plans, the budget, the hiring of the directors, the casting directors, the talent. They are the people whose taxes go crazy every year. That's what I am.
So that sounds like a lot. So Brian says he went to school to study theater as a performer, and that this life of a producer and all the financial doings that come with it, he says he learned on the fly. He told me that they don't teach you that in theater school, and what they also don't teach you is problem solving. Now, given the big names and talent he's dealt with over the years and just the extent of his career and, well, the fact that his industry is fueled by drama and dramatic people, I asked him if he has a process that he uses to kind of calm things down and think through a problem when things are going a little bit sideways.
Yes, in a problem-solving situation, it's all about listening. It's about listening to the actual problem and not trying to solve the problem while you're listening, but really actually genuinely listen to what's actually transpired. And once I listen to what's transpired, I ask what is needed, not necessarily to place blame on a problem. If it's dealing with two people, it's not about the blame. It's about the actual problem and where is it that we're trying to go. So how can we get to where it is that we need to go to get through this problem? And then we can go back and repair how we got to the problem. Mm. And usually it's communication. Usually it's communication. One party thought something had been communicated to the other party, and the other party was offended because of the one party not listening to what they thought had already been sent or said or communicated. So it's really, really about listening and then coming up with a solution.
Okay, but what if the things people are complaining about or mad about don't really make any logical sense? Like, they're screaming about things that are making you scratch your head like, what? And Brian gave a very incredibly diplomatic answer to that question, which I think proves just how good he is at his job.
The great thing about theater is much like the evolution of life. You know, children are the most honest human beings walking around the face of the earth. They cry when they want something. They tell you yes unabashedly, they want something. They tell you no, I don't want that. And there's no filter to disguise or mask any type of nastiness. They're not built like that. Children, they're just honest. They're honest people. We learn as adults how to filter and be conniving and be misleading and all of these things, right? Actors are like children in the most honest emotional way, right? Not in an immature way, but in a raw way where they're not looking to mislead or be untruthful. They're raw emotions of, yes, I want that. No, I don't want that. Don't do that. Don't speak like that. I need this. And it's very pure. And that's why I liken it to that of a child. It's pure and honest and raw. And in every situation that I've had when I'm dealing with my onstage talent, it is always about the production. It's always about underneath the most insane ask to the outside listener. It's about providing a space for them to be better supported in the actual moment in the theater, in the rehearsal room, on the stage. It is all about getting to that place.
Yeah.
It's never about, I am so important and you are so not important. No, it's, I need this thing so I can be the best person I can be when I go into the show.
Yeah.
That's where it's coming from, in a very honest and raw way.
See what I'm saying? Diplomatic. How diplomatic is this guy? Send him to any war-torn area of the world and he will have it solved like that. All right, so there's all this stuff about theater and working in theater that they don't teach you in theater school, and you got to kind of just learn by doing. But I asked Brian, what could he teach someone who's listening to this, who thinks that being a Broadway producer is what they want to do? What is his best advice for getting themselves on the road to success?
You know, the other day I was speaking to a young lady who asked me, what is the difference between my community theater and Broadway? And I said, and she wants to be a lighting designer. And I said, a stage is a stage is a stage. The budget might be a little larger than your community theater, right? You might have one or two lights that you can work with in your community theater, and you might have 2,000 lights you can work with on the Broadway stage. But the process of discovering and building and creating is the same, whether it's on your community, your local community theater, your local high school, your university, or on Broadway. So if someone wants to begin something and you want to be a producer, find something that you're passionate about and bring it to a stage, whether that's on Broadway or your local community theater, bring it to the stage and truly, truly believe that no matter what story you want to share, make sure it's a story that you love, because it's a story that's it's going to take a long time and take a lot of money to get it produced. And so I say love because you have to love it. It's too hard to produce if you don't love the story that you're bringing forward.
Finally, as I was talking to Brian, he told me that, you know, as a producer, as much as he would like to, he can't reach out and tell audiences, this is important, you need to see this. All he can do is focus on projects that he feels a personal connection to and hope that that connection carries over to theater goers. And so on that note, I asked him to tell us a little bit more about his newest show and why he felt like this was the right time to tell this story.
August Wilson's Joe Turner's Come and Gone is going to star Taraji P. Henson in her Broadway debut as Bertha Hawley and Cedric the Entertainer as Seth Hawley, being directed by the incomparable Debbie Allen. Joe Turner's Come and Gone is set in Pittsburgh in 1911. It's about a man named Loomis who's coming back to search for his family after being wrongly enslaved. He's in search for his daughter and his wife to repair his family. It's a story of self-reflection, of self-preservation, of rebuilding your family, reclaiming your family, and finding a new path forward. It's August Wilson's most poetic work. It's noted as his favorite play in his American Century cycle. He wrote 10 plays. And this particular one is really wonderful for this moment in time. Remember, I told you I will never tell you something's important, but I can tell you this particular story is a story that moves me about repairing a family that is in need. And it's something that we can all relate to when we want to see families reunited and not separated and people moving together in love. That's what this story is about. Joe Turner's Come and Gone at the Barrymore Theater. We begin previews on March 30th. We open April 25th.
People moving together in love. You know, that is a message that even a jaded, sarcastic jerk like me can get behind. And speaking of messages, we had a comment from listener Arabersonable. Man, some of these screen names you folks use. Whew! Anyway, Arabersonable says, love the channel, but can't look at the liquor bottles. Sorry. So what they're referring to is, yeah, there's a bunch of, if you watch the video of this show, you'll notice that there's a bunch of junk piled behind me, but it's not junk. It's all a bunch of stuff that I've collected over the years from guests of the show or products that I've talked to people for entrepreneur.com about. So, you know, I've got books from guests like Susan Orlean, her book Joyride. I've got a signed poster on the wall from Ken Burns. I've got an Invincible game from one of the top people at the comic book company, Skybound. And now for the booze, there's Dan Aykroyd's. There's a Crystal Head Skull Vodka skull behind me. There's a can of John Mulaney's non-alcoholic beer years. And there's a bottle of Rockin' Vodka, which is co-owned by Rick Nielsen, the guitarist from Cheap Trick. So it's not just a bunch of booze. It's research. It's journalism. Now, I'm not going to say that my research has left all of these bottles completely full, but they're not all completely empty. So that's something, right? So thank you for the comment. And for anyone listening who wants to chime in and let me know what's on your mind, you can email me directly at howsuccesshappens@entrepreneur.com. Or just leave a comment on whatever platform you happen to be watching or listening to this. We love the comments. Super producer Emily is collecting them, and we are going to get to as many as we can on the show. So leave them, and we'll read them. Put that on a bumper sticker. Anyway, thanks so much for listening and watching, and we will see you next time.